Chapter 22. Oscar Gutzman was his real name, but everyone called him the Fat Man. The origin of the moniker was evident at first sight. Carrying well over 300 pounds on a 5-foot frame, he appeared nearly as wide as he was tall. With a clean-shaven head and unusually large ears, he resembled an escapee from a traveling carnival. Yet his appearance belied the fact that Gutzman was one of the richest men in Israel. He grew up a ragtag urchin in the streets of Jerusalem, digging up coins from the hillside tombs with orphaned Arab boys or bumming free meals from Christian soup kitchens. His exposure to Jerusalem's diverse religions and culture, along with a hustler's ability to survive the streets, served him well as an adult businessman. Building a tiny construction firm into the largest hotel developer in the Middle East, he became a self-made man of huge riches who floated freely with the power brokers of the entire region. His personal drive for wealth and success was surpassed, however, by his passion for antiquities. It was the death of his younger sister at an early age, in a traffic accident outside a synagogue, that had altered his life. Like others who suffer a tragic personal loss, he began a private search for God. Only his quest migrated from the spiritual to the tangible as he sought to prove the truth of the Bible through physical evidence. A small collection of biblical-era antiquities had grown exponentially with his accumulated wealth, turning an early hobby into a lifelong passion. His artifacts, numbering in the hundreds of thousands, were now stored in warehouses spread over 3 countries. In his late 60s, Gutzman now devoted his full time and resources to his personal quest. Ridley Bannister entered an upscale boutique hotel situated on a prime parcel of Tel Aviv beachfront. The lobby was decorated in a minimalist contemporary style, with a number of uncomfortable-looking black leather chairs sitting starkly on a bright white-tiled floor. Bannister considered the design well executed, though he normally detested the look. A matronly hotel clerk greeted him warmly as he stepped to the front desk. "I have an appointment with Mr. Gutzman. My name is Bannister," he said. After a confirming phone call, he was escorted by a burly security guard to a private elevator and whisked to the top floor. Stepping off the elevator, the door to the penthouse was immediately thrown open by the Fat Man, a large cigar dangling from his lips.
"Ridley, come in, my boy. Come in," Gutzman greeted in a wheezy voice.
"You're looking well, Oscar," Bannister replied, shaking hands before entering the apartment. Bannister still found himself marveling at Gutzman's apartment, which resembled a museum more than a residence. Shelves and display cases were crammed everywhere, stuffed with pottery, carvings, and other relics, all thousands of years old. Gutzman led him down a hallway lined with ancient Roman mosaics taken from a public bath in Carthage. They passed under a stone arch from the ruins of Jericho and entered an expansive living room that overlooked the sands of Tel Aviv's Gordon Beach and the sparkling Mediterranean beyond. Taking a seat in an overstuffed leather chair, Bannister was surprised to find the residence empty but for a lone servant. On his prior visits, he had always found a throng of antiquities dealers milling about, hoping to hawk their latest prized artifact to the rich collector.
"The heat. I find it more oppressive all the time," Gutzman said, gasping from the walk to the front door. He then sank into an adjacent chair. "Marta, some cold drinks, please," he shouted to his servant.
Bannister removed the pendant from his pocket and placed it in Gutzman's hand. "A gift to you, Oscar. It's from Telerad." Gutzman studied the pendant, a broad smile slowly forming across his face.
"This is quite nice, Ridley. Thank you. I have a similar specimen from Nahal Besor. Early Canaanite, I would say."
"You are correct, as usual." "Is this new?" Bannister asked, pointing to a small glass plate on the coffee table that had a molded rim.
"Yes," Gutzman said, his eyes perking up. "I just acquired it. Excavated from Bet She'an. 2nd century molded glassware, probably manufactured in Alexandria. Look at the polishing on it."
Bannister picked up the plate and studied it closely. "It's in beautiful condition." The servant Marta appeared, delivering two glasses of lemonade, before disappearing into the kitchen.
So, Ridley, what is the latest buzz in the world of legal archaeological discovery? Gutsman asked with a chuckle.
There appear to be relatively few new projects slated to take the field next year. The Israel Museum will be sponsoring a dig on the shores of Galilee in search of an early settlement, while Tel Aviv University has approval for new exploration work at Megiddo. Most of the academic efforts appear to be directed at the continuation of existing field projects. There are, of course, the usual assortment of foreign, theologically sponsored digs, but as we know, they seldom amount to much.
True, but at least they show more imagination than the academic institutes, Gutsman said with derision.
I've been looking at two sites that I think you will be interested in. One is at Beit Jalal. If Bathsheba's tomb exists, I think it would be there in the town of her birth, which was then called Gilo. I've already formulated a site summary and excavation plan. Gutsman nodded for him to continue. The second site is near Gibeon. There's an outside chance of proving King Manasseh's palace is located there. This one needs more research, but has great potential, I believe. I can obtain the necessary excavation paperwork, as before, under the auspices of the Anglican Church, if you are agreeable to sponsorship.
Ridley, you have always delivered exciting finds, and I have found much joy in collaborating with your field digs. But I'm afraid my days of field sponsorship have come to an end.
You have always been most generous, Oscar, Bannister replied, suppressing his anger at losing the support of a longtime benefactor. Gutsman gazed out the window with a distant look in his eye.
I have spent most of my personal fortune collecting artifacts that support the narratives of the Bible, he said. I own mud bricks allegedly from the Tower of Babel. I have stone footings that may have supported Solomon's temple. I have 1,000,001 objects from the biblical era. Yet there is an element of doubt about each and every one of my pieces.
He suddenly fell into a wheezing fit, coughing and gasping for air, until he settled himself with a drink of lemonade. Oscar, do you need help? The fat man shook his head.
My emphysema has been getting the better of me lately, he gasped. The doctors are not hopeful.
Nonsense. You're as strong as David. Gutsman smiled, then slowly rose to his feet. The act seemed to give him renewed strength, and he stepped briskly over to a cabinet, then returned carrying a small plate of glass.
Take a look at this, he said, handing it to the archaeologist.
Bannister took the glass, observing that it was actually two sealed plates compressing a document in the middle. Holding it up to the light, he could see the protected document was a rectangular piece of papyrus with clear horizontal writing. A fine example of Coptic script, he noted.
Do you know what it says?
I can make out a few words, but am a bit lost without my reference materials, he acknowledged.
It's a harbor master's report from the port of Caesarea. It details the capture of a pirate vessel by a Roman galley. The pirates had in their possession armaments from a Roman centurion, one belonging to the Scholae Palatini.
Caesarea, Bannister said with a raised brow. I understand that some papyrus artifacts were taken as part of the recent theft there, along with the occurrence of at least one murder.
Yes, most unfortunate. The document clearly dates to the early 4th century.
Gutsman said, brushing off the inference. Interesting, Bannister replied, suddenly feeling uneasy with his host. And the significance?
I believe it offers potentially confirming evidence of the manifest, as well as an important clue to the cargo's disposition.
The manifest. So that's what it was all about, Bannister thought. The old goat was staring down the Grim Reaper and was making a desperate play for divine evidence before his time ran out. Bannister chuckled to himself. He had pocketed a lot of money from both Gutsman and the Church of England trying to hunt down the legend of the manifest. Perhaps there was still more to be gained. Oscar, you know I've searched extensively both here and in England and have come up empty.
There must be another path.
We both came to the conclusion that it probably no longer exists, if it ever did in the first place.
That was before this, Gutsman said, tapping the glass plate. I've been at this game a long time. I can smell the link here. It is real, and I know it. I've decided to devote myself and my resources to this and nothing else.
It is a compelling clue, Bannister admitted.
This will be, the fat man said in a tired voice, the culmination of my life's quest. I hope you can help me reach it, Ridley.
You can count on me. Marta appeared again, this time reminding Gutsman of a pending doctor appointment. Bannister said goodbye and let himself out of the apartment. Leaving the hotel, he contemplated the papyrus scroll and whether Gutsman's assumptions could possibly be correct. The old collector did know his stuff, he had to admit. Of more concern to Bannister was formulating a means to profit from the fat man's new pursuit. Deep in thought, Bannister didn't notice a young man in a blue jumpsuit waiting beside his car.
Mr. Bannister? The youth inquired.
Yes.
Courier delivery, sir, he replied,
handing Bannister a large, thin envelope. Bannister slid into his car and locked the doors before opening the letter. Shaking out the contents, he just sat and shook his head when a first-class airline ticket to London plopped into his lap.